What happened to God's beautiful new world when our parents disobeyed God's command? What happened to plants, to animals, to human beings, and why? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson from the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and with me as conversation partners today are Larry Waverka and Dave Thomas, two of my colleagues in the School of Theology.
Greetings.
Welcome to both of you. Now, we're going to talk about the fall into sin. The story is in Genesis 3. If all you had was Genesis 3, what could we say happened as a result of sin? If you look just at Genesis 3, what was the impact of sin on human beings, according to Genesis 3? Someone like to tackle that.
Well, we started to have to eat vegetables. I mean, that's been a common sort of...
What did we eat before that?
Fruits and nuts and grains, things you could pick with your hands.
Now we have to grow.
Now we have to dig the ground, put them down in there, pull them out. You see,
I'd never heard that story before. That's amazing. No.
Oh my, that's a common childhood complaint that vegetables are a consequence of sin.
So we could eat fruits and nuts, and that would be the original Edenic
original diet. Yes, and grains.
Yeah, fruits and nuts and grains. They grow by themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's clever.
You know, Alden, I sometimes think about Genesis 3 because when you see the effects of sin, some of the results were immediate, some of them were intermediate, and some of them were ultimate, if I can use that word. And I think the most immediate one was the loss of clothing, whatever the original clothing, or a sense of nakedness. I think that fear resides with most human beings. There are some who... I have no compunctions against being without clothes, but most of us would feel very distressed. And I project from that to the experience of Adam and Eve, they must have been horrified by that. Mm-hmm. I think another immediate consequence is the creation of guilt. Mm-hmm. One of the saddest parts of Scripture is there where God comes looking for Adam and Eve, and they're hiding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's beautiful to read how God would come down and meet with them in the cool of the day. Now they're hiding. And, of course, it's ludicrous to hide. And yet something has happened to Adam and Eve that they don't want to meet God anymore. And I think that kind of thing appears in human experience. Children are the most transparent when they do wrong. You can see it from about 50 miles away. I think those are some immediate results. I think another immediate result is the transformation of human nature to be oriented to self now instead of to God or whatever it was oriented to in the beginning.
And you see that blaming other people?
Yeah.
You know, the woman you gave me.
Yeah. And of course, that complicates the relationship now between Adam and Eve, whereas before we imagined it to have been this beautifully complementary interaction that was not fraught with conflict. Now there's going to be a drive for dominance in both people that's going to create fireworks. So I think those are some of the immediate results that we would notice immediately.
Another immediate result would be something we see going on with the housing crisis in this country. And people, because of bad lending practices, losing their homes. You ask someone who's having to lose a home and walk away from it what that's like. And this couple went through that experience.
Yeah. Now, there are a couple of things which have developed. By the time you get to Romans, you have the more distinct portrayal of a moral twist to human nature. That's not clear in Genesis, at least not explicitly stated. It's implied by the way they behave. You have troubles in growing things. It's going to be more difficult to grow your garden. That much is clear.
Or grow children.
Or grow children, yes. But the moral twist, which is there in Romans, then is taken further by Augustine about 400 years after Christ, where he now develops the doctrine of original sin, where there is a permanent taint there. That's not all that clear. But what I want to focus on here for a few moments now is the picture of God. And Dave, you alluded to that. God coming in, because in its full-blown Calvinist formulation, where we talk about redemption and sin and God's wrath, there is absolute and instantaneous separation between a holy God and a sinful, worthless human being. Now, what evidence of the wrath of God do you find in response to the first sin? Again, as we take Genesis 3 as it's written, what indication is there of the wrath of God in Genesis 3?
Well, I think the way you understand the wrath of God is a key to answering that question. And most people see it as some kind of desire for vengeance, some ill temper or hot temper. Mm-hmm. I like the definition of the wrath of God that I read a long time ago, that it is God's settled determination to be rid of evil and all its residues. So it's not a flash in the pan thing, it's a very deliberate thing, and it's strategic.
But you see, in its Calvinist formulation, human beings would be absolutely annihilated.
So why did God come down in the cool of the day then to visit with them?
See? Precisely.
So right there would be an indication that that classic formulation cannot be correct in terms of Scripture.
See, it's a nice, tidy philosophical position, but it flies in the face of all those places where God comes in contact with human beings,
mm-hmm.
where he's really very gentle.
In a redemptive manner.
In a redemptive manner.
Yeah. Yes. Not come to punish or to lambaste.
At the same time, you're emphasizing what is the action or behavior of God that would be a part or an outgrowth of his wrath against sin. I see the wrath of God against sin as the effect that sin has upon God in terms of what he has to do in response to sin, which is to allow the consequences of choice. And to allow the consequences of a choice to say no to God, a choice to say, to turn away from the relationship with God, as an incredibly frustrating and angering kind of thing for God, because he has to honor that choice. Mm-hmm. And you see the wrath of God against sin in Gethsemane and on the cross, and it's an absent God. It's a God who's not there, whose hands are tied by the choice that Jesus made in Gethsemane to die. And God cannot intervene. He cannot step. Well, he can, but because of that choice, mm-hmm. he must honor it, and to honor it is incredibly frustrating for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, in this tension here between those who would emphasize the goodness of God and those who would emphasize the power of God, the free will argument is that God's ultimate goodness is affirmed by granting free will.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you're going to have more sin along the way, more tears on God's face,
yes.
instead of simply the wrath. And yet there is this incredible tension between a God who wants his children to do what's best for them and for the universe and sees them going the other direction. And parents still have that today when they look at their children who are doing destructive things.
But, Yolden, I think you've described very clearly the dilemma that confronts God, if I can use those words, is that love and justice are not easy companions. And we tend to talk of them in either or terms. I think we should talk of them in mm-hmm. both and
both
terms.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not the one against the other so much as it is the two of them have competing interests.
Wouldn't you ultimately say that the two are one? In other words, when God does the just thing, that would be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
See? And so if sinners are misled by whatever factors, it is the right thing to do for God to plan a way of escape. It's not just, well, we'll do something for you guys. No, it is driven by God's very character. And it's the just and right thing to do for God to plan salvation.
See, I like the analogy the link to the idea of parenting. I think being a parent, especially of a headstrong child, gives you an amazing insight into the struggle that God has had to deal with. Because, you know, on one hand, you'd like to lower the boom on the child, but that won't fix the problem.
Hmm. Now, this is a more difficult question because it doesn't have a straightforward answer. But as you go through the Old Testament, especially the early chapters, what evidence is there that this distortion as a result of sin lies primarily on the human side rather than on the divine side? And I'm thinking here of violence, the expectations, and so on. Any comment on that?
Well, you think of the story of the children of Israel, for example, and their escape from Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
As they're being pursued by Pharaoh's army, they're indeed worried about persisting or living through that ordeal. And as they come through the Red Sea and stand on the bank on the other side, and they watch this violent act of destruction upon the Egyptian army. If you're standing on the Egyptian side, you're saying, wow, that is really heavy stuff. That's heavy-handed. My, look what God's doing here. This is awful. If you're standing on the other side, you are singing God's praises and for doing an act of deliverance. Mm-hmm. Great deal, it seems to me, has to do with perspective. On which side of the Red Sea are you standing?
Mm-hmm.
And often the children of Israel were standing on the wrong side of the sea when God acted singularly, and I would say in the right way and in the loving way, but it was perceived as pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah. But then you get immediately into another issue which Jesus' experience highlights, love your enemies. How do you stand on the other side of the Red Sea and love those Egyptians?
Mm-hmm.
See? And I think you see this tension played out many times. There ought to be a natural reaction against the suffering of innocent people. So I call the anger of purity, the wrath of the Lamb against that which is destructive. But then how at the same time do you have tears on your face? And I think that is a dilemma which you see again and again, both Old Testament and New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
It's one which is not easy for us. I think you see this especially when parents have to make a decision to send one child away from home because it's being destructive to the other children. Now, I've never had to do that, but I've watched from afar when I've seen those things happen, and that's a very painful experience.
Yes.
So the Lord has blessed us with good kids, but as I've watched that, I've sensed some of the pain and the agony. Well, our discussion next time, we'll talk about the atonement and the divine initiative, what God is going to do for us. My conversation partners again will be Larry Baverka and Dave Thomas. My thank you also to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer, for the good word. I'm Alden Thompson. Thank you for listening in.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.